Hello, this is Dr. Dave, and you're listening to the Knowledge Share with Dr. Dave podcast, hosted on grokshare.com. Knowledge Share with Dr. Dave is also on iTunes and Google Play. You are listening to episode number 9 with Armin Mehrabian, an enterprise agile coach, business leader, and man of faith. I am certainly appreciative of Armin for his agile at scale knowledge and the positive energy he brings. We are live at the Agile Open San Diego on a warm, sunny day in California. We're here today at Agile Open in San Diego, which we're having a great time. I'm here with Armin. Armin, how are you doing?
Good, good. Thanks for having me, Dave.
Yeah, really great that we had an opportunity for us to just connect after so much time. 7 quick questions.
Sure.
And the first one is, what is agile coaching and why is it needed?
Good question. You know, a lot of companies that adopt agile, they have in their minds a goal. The goal is to go, usually the goal is to get better results faster, right? That's sort of the management goal. And they quite don't know how to get there. A lot of them go through training, and you know, they go through training and they get their Scrum Master certification, product owner, all those kind of academic things. But when they take it back to their companies, they find that within their own context, they don't quite know how to apply it. It sounded good in the class, but now that they're back in their own environments, they run into trouble. They kind of find themselves going down rabbit holes, and they need somebody that's done it before to help them along, to mentor them, and to help them sort of stay away from the landmines that that exist whenever you're doing this kind of transformation.
So would you see that, let's say it's synonymous to someone who was an athlete, for example, they played sports all of their lives, and now they're at this top level, because most enterprises are at the top level of their game, that they need someone to help tune them, to help them to be better, to point them in the right direction. Is that similar to that?
I think that's an excellent analogy. You know, a lot of the companies already are doing a good job. You know, they've got products, they're profitable. So what they don't want to do is they don't want to introduce any kind of new process that makes them go backwards, right? They don't want to adopt a new tool or a new way of doing things that disrupts the flow that they're already good at. So an agile coach makes sure that they're applying these new techniques in a way that's improving them, and also guarding against the bad practices or the bad habits that they can get into. And you know, they've seen the anti-patterns. So coaches, having worked many years with different companies, have seen how agile can be abused. And they make sure that these teams don't fall down those bad patterns.
Excellent. So tell us about Armin, and how did you get involved with coaching?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And, you know, I started out as a developer. And after about 15 years of doing development, really enjoying it, I found that I like to work with people even more. You know, so this kind of takes me back to, you know, just kind of in my personal life. I was very involved with my church, and I used to lead Bible studies. I used to lead men's groups where we studied the Bible, and, you know, we applied it to our lives. You know, a lot of us had young families. And what I found myself, I really enjoyed that aspect of my private life. And at work, I found myself more and more being useful in mentoring and coaching, onboarding new employees. And people said, hey, you know, you would make a great team lead. And so I became a team lead. I really enjoyed that. I was very effective at it. And then the next step was, well, you know, it'd be great if you went into a management role and managed a group of people and, you know, did the management things, like interviewed people, hired people, did the performance appraisals. And so that's what I ended up doing. And big part of that was, you know, what's a good process that we can follow where, and my goal was, as a manager, how could I create an environment where each person on my team could do their best work? Right, so that became kind of my goal, is how do I create a work environment? I mean, everything from you know, the way that we organized our furniture to, you know, titles, to the way that we structured the work for the developers and the testers and the product managers and things like that, that so that everybody could feel like every day they come to work, they're unhindered, right? So they can do their best work, there's no impediments. And what I found is that the amount of process that the company was requiring was very stifling. And so that got in the way. And so I started looking at, well, what are other companies doing, right? What are the kind of the up and coming companies, the younger companies doing? And this was, you know, the time frame was 2003, 2004. And there were some blogs called Agile Development. And somebody pointed me to those blogs, and I started reading it, and I was like fascinated. I was like, wow, this is incredible. So at that time, Martin Fowler had a blog, and they talked about these different agile processes. And I remember reading about the different ones. At that time, XP was really big. And then I read just one paragraph about Scrum, and I was hooked. I was like, okay, this sounds like exactly that would be a good fit for my team. And at that time, I was thinking about the context was my team of 14 guys. And so we started doing daily stand-ups. You know, I didn't have to let the rest of the company know. So the company I was working for was a software company. We had probably about 500 people in software development. I said, okay, I'm going to just experiment with this in my own group. And my team absolutely loved it. The daily stand-ups, you know, having time boxes where we produce things, they just absolutely ate it up. And I had a lot of new hires, so this was great for them to get integrated and learn from other team members and onboard themselves in a self-organized way, not in an HR kind of a structure, but in a, you know, in a team members helping each other kind of a forum. So that's how I got started. And then I moved on to another company, did the same thing, but at a little larger scale. So we were trying to adopt Scrum at scale, and we immediately started running into problems. And at that time, there wasn't a great solution for it, so we kept hitting ourselves against the wall. What we found is that Scrum works great at a team level, but once you go beyond that, once you have a larger product that involves five or six teams, now you started getting, you know, having problems like, okay, so what do you do with shared team members? What do you do about release planning? What do you do when, you know, you have fixed items that you have, it's fixed requirements? What do you do with specifications? What about documentation? So these are questions that at that time, there weren't really good answers to. Companies internally were handling them their own way, but there weren't any really good books on it. So I said, okay, you know, I need to, you know, this was like a custom job. Every company needed it done differently. And what I told myself is, you know, if this job, this management job that I have, if it ended someday, like if the company dissolved or something like that, I'm going to go on my own and be an agile coach and trainer. And so that was back in 2008. And so that's kind of when I went on this sort of a solo journey as a coach. And I started my own company as a coach and trainer in 2008. And, you know, so for the last 8 years, I've been on this coaching and training journey, and I got introduced to someone that really attacked and solved this problem to a large extent, this problem of enterprise scale agility. And that was Dean Leffingwell. So I was introduced to him in 2011. And that's kind of what launched my journey in this scaled agile framework, which is something that I've been completely immersed in ever since.
That's a great story. That's a great, fascinating story. So as a coach, tell me, how do you inquire about the stakeholders' needs when you are on an engagement?
Yeah, so great question. I think a lot of coaching involves listening. So one of the things I do is I get introduced to a team, and I like to just attend, kind of drop in on stand-ups. I like to drop in on retrospectives. I like to drop in on their planning meetings. And I like to get an idea of, you know, who are the team members? What is the bigger problem that they're trying to solve? And I like to spend time sort of in the trenches. And then I like to spend time with the executive team. You know, what is it that they're looking to solve? What is the bigger problem they're looking to solve? And so I do a lot of sort of, I kind of play the anthropologist to some extent, where I'm trying to understand this environment. And so it's like 90% listening, 10% talking. So that's one approach that I take. The other thing I like to do is I like to do a level set on people's knowledge and understanding of what Agile is. Because what I find is a lot of companies will have varying levels of understanding. And so because of that, somebody will say something like a sprint, and half of the team understands that that's talking about a two-week iteration. But then there's another part of the team that thinks that what that means is we just got to go really, really fast, and doesn't understand that that has nothing to do with going fast. It has to do with the iteration length. So in pretty short order, I like to do a training session and get everybody to be at the same level, or at least have a base understanding, so that at least our communication is effective. And then I like to identify the change agents, and then in an iterative way, I like to look at, you know, setting some goals and say, okay, so in 6 months, we want to be able to accomplish these things. We want to reduce our number of defects. We want to increase the quality of our deliverables from reducing defects all the way to meeting the customer needs. And so we set some milestones like that. And usually the customer has one or two things, and I kind of have to lead that engagement. I don't want to be an order taker, right? I want to be able to lead them down this journey. And usually they're all over that, right? They want to see those changes themselves. They just don't know how to articulate it. So, you know, the bottom line is they want to improve, but they're not quite sure what they should expect, right? So they want somebody to kind of tell them, these are some realistic goals that you should set for yourself. And then, of course, the rest is the execution of that, of those goals.
One thing that I hear you say, that there's a discovery of some hidden truths. How do you go about that whole discovery process? Because sometimes there are a lot of things that are not said in the environment, and as a coach, you have to be able to discern that and bring that out so that the team could really move forward, because sometimes it may be an impediment in the process. How do you go through that process of that discovery?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. And it is, to your point, it is oftentimes hidden, right? Like, they're not going to come out and say, hey, here's our bigger fear. And so you got to really listen to that. Let me just tell you an example. So I'm working with a client right now that is multidisciplined, in the sense that their product is not just pure software. Their product is, it involves hardware, firmware, software, and also mechanical design, right? So I can't tell you the name of the company, but what they make is in-flight entertainment systems. And what their challenge is, it depends on the group. So the software group, their challenge is that, you know, they feel like there's really not much room for experimentation, that the software group is told what to build. And even though they've been doing Scrum for 4 years, a lot of the spirit of Scrum, a lot of the spirit of agility is missing, right? So the teams feel like they're told what to do, and they're approaching it in a very waterfall way. It's just that they're doing it in two-week increments. So that's their challenge. The hardware group feels like they're doing just fine, and they're being very effective. Their fear is that Scrum and, you know, this whole scaled agile framework is going to impose more process on them. Right, so their fear is different than the software team. So their fear is, we already have to comply with ISO and CMMI. Now you're going to come in and give us even more process. Right, so a lot of times it's listening for what is it that these teams fear from Agile. Like, a lot of people have heard things like, oh, Agile means no documentation, and we have to have documentation. So immediately right off the bat, they have some misconceptions that have to be addressed. And this oftentimes is hidden. Like, they won't tell you that this is their fear. But after some conversation with them, you realize, oh, that's their fear, and let me proactively address that.
The other part of this is that as a coach, you have to influence stakeholders and teams to engage in actionable outcomes. Mm-hmm. The focus is influence and actionable outcomes. What is your process to achieve that?
Yeah, no, that's something that comes up a lot is, you know, Agile has a lot of kind of philosophical tenets. But until you can actually lay that out as a, okay, step one, step two, step three, and then we get to your goal, you really haven't helped the team much. So it's really important to be very clear on, yeah, we want to achieve better quality, and these are the steps that we have to go through. So one of the things that the Scaled Agile Framework, one of the tenets that it has, one of the things I really like about it, is that out of every planning increment, that we, the outcome of that planning increment is, here's a set of objectives that we agree to. And those objectives are written in a way that the stakeholders will understand. And that is an objective, or you can call it a goal, that the whole team agrees to along with the stakeholder. And so the idea is that if the team can self-organize to meet those goals and to meet those results, that the stakeholders will be happy. But yet they're given a lot of leeway on how they can meet those objectives, right? So for instance, the objective might be that we are going to reduce the time it takes to configure this entertainment system. Like, I'm going to be able to set up my playlist within 5 minutes, right? So that's the objective. Now, how we actually accomplish that, the team has a lot of leeway on how they can do that. For instance, the team might decide that, you know, given the time that we have an approach that means that we get to pick the movie, we get to put it into a pick list, and then we can hit play and it'll play every movie that's in that list, in that playlist. Or they could take another approach, but the outcome that they're looking for is agreed on. And what this does for the team is that the team then writes these outcomes that they're looking for on a big post-it note, and they put it in their work area. Every day they go to work, they see the outcomes that they need to get to. And the brain goes to work subconsciously in thinking about all the different ways that they can meet that outcome. And as a team, they accomplish those outcomes. And it's a very satisfying thing. And it's also very, very productive for the company, because now there's no ambiguity, right? The ambiguity has been sorted out. Now the team is thinking about how they can accomplish that. And also they sync up with the business owners, with their stakeholders every 2 weeks and show them the progress that they're making. So if the stakeholder doesn't like the direction in which they're approaching the problem, they can get that feedback. And so that's been a very, very effective way to keep the teams in sync with their stakeholders and to make sure that what the teams are producing is valuable. And that way the teams are happy and the stakeholders are happy, and it takes there's no surprises at the end of that planning increment. And then at the end of that, if there's things that they didn't quite meet 100%, they get to talk about it, and they talk about, well, how can we improve it and do a better job next time in the next planning increment? And so the teams are continuously improving, and the stakeholders are deriving benefit in pretty short-term cycles.
It goes back to the common tenet of inspect and adapt, one of the core principles of Agile.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what steps are taken to deliver innovation through people networks and innovation brokers?
Hmm. Yeah, so innovation is the key. I mean, if you think about why people go into this business, a lot of it's because they like to build cool things. And, if you're lucky enough to work for a company that's building cool things, well, that's just part and parcel of your job. But a lot of times what will happen is you end up having to work on things like, for instance, you know, you have to fix defects, and you have to do things behind the scene that are not as exciting as, you know, inventing new interfaces and things of that nature. So it's really important to build in these innovation sprints, what we call them in the Scale Agile framework, so that every cycle, every 10 weeks, you have an opportunity. Maybe it's a 2-day hackathon. Maybe it's a 2-day some kind of a competition to see who can build the fastest sorting algorithm, or something of that nature, or build the best user interface, right? So you can have a competition to say, okay, you know, out of the 6 teams, we're going to compete on who can build the best interface to building this playlist. And that way the teams are kept on their toes. You know, it also introduces a lot of interesting work, injects a lot of interesting work. And the teams feel like, and let me give you an example. My brother works for a company that does that. And he says that, you know, the times when they're not doing that, a lot of times they will think about, okay, in the next hackathon, this is what I'm going to build. And this is the person I want to team with to build that cool thing. So it's kind of that thing that they look forward to every iteration, is that 2-day hackathon or the 2-day or 4-day innovation sprint that they'll get to do. So it keeps them anticipating that time, and also it keeps them sharp, right, and interested in the work. So that's the way that we build it in. We build it into the cycle. We don't want innovation to be something that you do on the weekend, or that you do if you have extra time. We need to make sure that it's built in to the normal way that people work, and that those people are recognized and rewarded accordingly.
I'm going to ask you to look into the crystal ball.
Okay.
And I want you to tell me your projection of agile coaching as an industry going forward, especially around scale.
Yeah, so that's something that I've been observing in the last 12 years that I've been doing this. Is, you know, if you had said, we need, you know, do you need a coach? A long time ago, it used to be, at that, you know, time when I got into the industry, it was kind of a luxury. The idea was that, yeah, we'll send the manager to training, and the manager will come back and be the coach for the team. What we've seen is that doesn't work. Managers are so busy attending meetings and, doing other work that they don't have the time. The second thing is, the training is just a 2-day training. What that means is they're only 2 days ahead of their teams in the area of knowledge and experience. So they clearly don't have enough knowledge and experience to coach the teams. So it's created a new industry, really, which is this agile coach. And the agile coaching, I think, is being valued more and more, because companies are realizing that the return on that investment is huge. If they can bring in a coach to work with their teams for let's just say a 6-month period, what they're seeing is that the ROI on that is like 100-fold. That the teams, all the team, even if the teams improve by just 10%, it pays for itself many, many times over. So this is, so when I look in the crystal ball, I see that industry expanding. I see that companies will have internal coaches, right? So that they're not always bringing somebody in from the outside. And the value of the internal coach is that this internal coach has knowledge of the business context, right? So if you bring me in, I'm an external coach, I have to spend some time to come up to speed on the company's context. What I bring to the table is that I see how other companies do solve the same similar problems, but I don't know your business, right? So it's going to take me some time to learn the lingo of your business, to get some context-specific knowledge and build some good examples for your business. Whereas an internal coach knows those things because they've kind of grown up with your company. So I see a lot of a combination of internal coaches and the occasional need for an external coach. So that's kind of how I see that happening. And also the whole management style, you know, the way that you motivate knowledge workers. One of the things we've learned over the last 20 years is that knowledge workers are a unique breed. They're very different from the industrial age workers in that knowledge workers know their job better than their managers. So the days of a manager telling their direct reports how to do their jobs better, those days are gone, right? So the people that are doing the work know the job better. They're closer to the work. They oftentimes have more education in doing their work than their managers. So the coaches come in and work with those people directly, and they don't have authority over them, but they have great influence. And they're able to work with the coaches, I mean, work with the people without the fear of any kind of repercussions in case mistakes are made or, you know, anything like that. So the coaching job has become very, very effective, and companies are starting to realize that. And so I just see more and more coaching happening. I see flatter organizations in the future. So one manager might have, you know, 15, 20 direct reports. And what you'll have is a couple of coaches in the mix. And the other cool thing about coaches is that one coach can coach up to 30 people, right? Because they can coach maybe five teams. And that could be very, very cost effective to companies.
Well, thank you so much for your time, for sharing about enterprise agile coaching.
My pleasure.
For our audience, if they wanted to send you, you know, maybe a tweet or something like that, do you have a Twitter handle that you want people to hook up with you?
Yes. So my Twitter handle is Armand, ARMOND underscore M, M as in Mary. Follow me on Twitter and send me any questions that you have. I'd be happy to engage with you.
Well, thank you again so much, and looking forward to sharing this knowledge and information with our audience.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
When I pursued my SAFE Program Consultant SPC certification, Armand was one of my instructors. I was fortunate to learn from someone with sound experience and clarity of the value of agility to the organization. Perhaps you may experience the same fortune of being trained by Armand. If you have questions for Armand, connect with Armand on Twitter at Armand_M. Look for the KnowledgeShare with Dr. Dave podcast on iTunes and Google Play. The KnowledgeShare with Dr. Dave podcast is hosted on grokshare.com. If you have any questions for Dr. Dave, reach out on Twitter at Dr. Dave Info or at KnowledgeShare.
You grok share.
I grok it and KnowledgeShare. Every day, every day. Until next time, pursue goodness, share, and learn.